Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and I have in the neighborhood with me a person, not necessarily a funny person, but a person who knows and appreciates funny people, and apparently treats them well and with respect, and that has led to his having not only a comedy club on the West Coast, but much more recently, one on the East Coast as well. The founder and proprietor of the Laugh Factory and the New York Laugh Factory, Jamie Masada, is on the phone with us from the West Coast. Hello, Jamie. Welcome to the neighborhood.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Good, good. Now, some of the folks who have played over the years, certainly at the West Coast place, apparently Richard Pryor, Chris Rock, Rodney Dangerfield, Jerry Seinfeld, Jim Carrey, Damon Wayans, Paul Rodriguez, Arsenio Hall. These are all correct, and I'm sure I'm leaving out a bunch as well.
And many, many more.
Who was, like, the first, first couple of people that you remember who walked on stage and really gave you a boost?
My first comedian, the first night I opened the club in West Coast, was Richard Pryor.
Really? The very first?
Very first comedian went on the stage.
Now, this was only about 20-something years ago, so he was already a very...
27 years ago.
27. So he was already a big star. He was doing you, like a courtesy of going up and doing that.
He liked me because I was a young comedian, young guy, opening the club, and he came in with Paul Mooney was emceeing my club and brought Richard Pryor on, and Richard Pryor went on. Instead of he get paid, because I didn't have that much money and nothing, and he actually gave me $100.
Nice. I wish I could run a club where the comedians pay me.
He kind of want to help me, and he signed it, and he gave me $100 bill.
Did you have a relationship after that with him? Did he come back to the club often?
Oh, yes, many times. Many, many thousands of times. And then after that, for 14 years, I run a comedy camp, Laugh Factory comedy camp for underprivileged kids. That was one of my commitments to give back to community.
Mm-hmm.
And Richard Pryor would come in every year for 14 years. He would come in and talk to comedy camp kids, because these kids, again, they were underprivileged, they didn't have nothing, and he would encourage them, and he would talk to them about how it's like to be underprivileged, and why he was becoming successful, and how he was raised in a whorehouse, and how he dealt with the pimps, and all of that stuff. And he said, he would make it fun of me, he said, if Jamie Masada make it, and he opened a club, a Laugh Factory, mm-hmm. here with his accent, guys, you all can make it.
Now, explain about the accent. You're not from here. What are you doing here?
No, I'm Iranian and Israeli.
Which first? Where were you born?
I'm Sabra by birth, my mother Iranian, my father Israeli.
So, as a Jew, you got out of Iran because you had to, or you wanted to be there? I mean, you were in Sabra, so you went from Israel to Iran. Why?
We went up there because my mother was Iranian, and it was a fixed marriage, and we went there. And then I came back to Israel, and from Israel, I came back here.
Well, what brought you to America?
I came in here to become a star.
Okay.
A big, huge star that, unfortunately, I came in here 14 years old. I didn't know anybody. And somehow I ended up doing stand-up comedy because I walked into one of the comedy clubs looking for doing a comedy. I was looking to get a job, any kind of job. I was a young kid, and mm-hmm. the comedian did not show up. And they told me if I can tell jokes. I said, well, yeah, I told jokes in bar mitzvah and wedding. The guy said, well, you're on next because I don't have no comedian to go on. And I said, okay, he put me on, and the time I was on the stage, I forgot I had to speak English, I started speaking Farsi.
You started, I bet they laughed. It's like a Latke Gravis kind of Andy Kaufman moment, I guess.
It was something like that, but at the same time, it was kind of really, for the first 5 minutes, was so painful because I kept on saying, and I was so nervous. Nobody laughed, it wasn't that many people in the audience, it was about 20, 28 people, and they all stared at me, and I was shaking.
Ooh. But did you give up after that, or did you really try and become a comedian before?
No, then at that point I realized I got a job as a comedian, and I was hoping to get it because I was supporting my parents back home, so I was hoping to make money sent back home, and end of the month after I went every night, he put me on stage one, he didn't have anybody at the end of the month. I said, I need to send money back home when I go get paid. He said, you're out of your mind? Comedian, they don't get paid.
Oh.
I said, excuse me. So then I asked comedian, all of the comedians said, no, we don't get paid. We all work for free.
Don't they get part of the cover or something like that? Or
no, 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 no. I was the first club in the United States ever paid comedian.
That's amazing. So what would the comedians do? Why would they bother if they weren't
getting... Because they need to practice their material.
Well, those are the high-level comedians who are making money doing something else, but the ones on the way up, literally they had to do just other jobs and do the comedy only as a hobby?
I think so. That's what they had to do it. Now it's a little different because now it's different, but before, no. It just was, you know, you do it, it was like a scoop. You go to school.
Yeah. No, but even in fairly recent, like when I was younger and considering going into that, I mean, you would go into a club and you would have to guarantee a certain number of people, but if you did, then maybe you got a little bit of the cover charge. And we're talking about the lowest level of the beginning.
But in New York, they do that. In Los Angeles, we don't do that. And in New York, since I came, it's a very, very much taken advantage of comedian and performer. You got to bring so many 10 to 8 audience. They all have to pay before you get 5 minutes on the stage. I think that's so unkosher. I have a club in New York City in Times Square, 42nd Street. I would never do that.
Yeah, I have to ask you about, I know obviously you have a big successful Laugh Factory on the West Coast and then you moved it to the East. Have you been doing well in the location? It sort of still seems like it's part of the whole, you know, sleazy 42nd from the outside. I'm sure inside it's very nice. But it still sort of feels like it's part of that old Times Square. And I'm wondering if you're getting the customers, you know, in it.
I'm wondering when is the last time you walk on 42nd Street? 42nd, Disney is there. Everybody's
moved
there.
Well, aren't you on 9th Avenue on the strip on 9th and 40s? Or maybe there's another one that I'm... Forgive me if I'm confusing it.
Yeah, you are confusing me. I'm on the 8th. I'm a farther up. I'm right across street from the new Times building it is and all of that stuff.
Oh, okay. And how have you been doing on the west, on the East Coast? How about
East Coast? I'm doing not bad. You know, I'm doing very good.
And who are some of the people who've appeared here in the past couple of months?
Oh God, from Norm Macdonald to you name them. There, Bob Saget appeared there. There, Eddie Griffin. I mean, everybody that they come in there, they perform there.
Having seen, I would assume, if not thousands, certainly hundreds of comedians practice their craft and start a brand new routine and work it and work it, what would you say is the essence of a good stand-up comic?
Good essence of good stand-up comics have a confidence, the ability of tell a good story. Stand-up comedy is, to me, is a good storyteller. Be able to tell a story and have a confidence in his ability that the story he chosen to tell, share it with everybody, would be funny.
And the ability to sell tickets, I guess, or that people want to see them. Yeah.
And that type of material that we used to Bob Hope do, joke, those doesn't work anymore too much.
Well, you know what? You get the right comedian and it probably still could. You know, if you put Jackie the Joke Man Martling on stage, he will, you know, probably kill.
I mean, Jackie and the Joke Man, the Martling, he's actually working my club every Wednesday.
Oh, so, well, that's what he does. So
every
he
Wednesday.
Pulls
but
it off.
Jackie, if you're looking at Jackie, Jackie is a personality, is a celebrity, and Jackie the Joke Man, at the same time, his joke is not joke. What he does, he challenges people. People, they tell him, hey, to tell a joke about that, tell a funny story about that, and he comes up with it. That's a challenge. For example, George Wallace, another person, do that type of thing. You challenge him with the mother jokes. He told hundreds of mother jokes.
By the way, we're talking about George Wallace, the comedian, obviously not George Wallace, the dead, crippled, racist, political guy. Right?
No, George Wallace, the comedian, Reverend Go George, we call him Reverend George Wallace.
Right, yeah.
And, of course, that's different. You know, I mean, the jokes, you know, that used to, you know, a lot of comedians still doing it, but... It's mostly is, you know, people like Richard Pryor broke a lot of ground, and he was the first person who went up there. He talked, he communicated with people.
Well, Lenny
the
Bruce
new comic,
too.
For example, one of the new comic upcomer, the comic is up right now. His record came in after a month. He sold over a million DVD and CD. Dane Cook.
Who? Sorry?
Dane Cook.
Dane Cook, okay.
Yeah. He's one of the best comics right now. He, a couple of weeks ago, he hosted Saturday Night Live. He's a wonderful comic. He's a really great comic.
And who are some of the other recent, over like the past couple of years, who maybe aren't famous yet, but you feel really are ready and should be?
Well, there are, you know, everybody's time's coming in. There are many comics I see every day that they are saying their time is going to come in. You know, I mean, there are many, you know, from Latino to African-American to Asian comic to, for example, you see Filipino comic. Every time they are there, that they just kind of keep doing it. Hi, this is Jamie Masada. You listening to Dave's Gone By.
You know, when I was researching for this interview on the net and Googling you and stuff like that, I've got to ask about how, I guess it has to do with your charitable stuff, but on a certain level you knew Michael, or still maybe know Michael Jackson.
No, I do not know Michael Jackson. I mean, I do, you know, a lot of, in Jewish language we call it, my commitment is to do a lot of mitzvah because part of my background, my father taught me, God bless his soul, to we have to share whatever we make it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of our believing it. That's part of my heritage. And I do a lot of, I do comedy camp for underprivileged kids called Laugh Factory Comedy Camp. I do Thanksgiving and Christmas, we feed homeless. We do high holiday, Jewish high holidays in a club in Los Angeles that
cool.
800 people that come in. I've been doing it past almost 18 years. The people that come in, that's people they can't afford to go anywhere. Because if you go somewhere, you got to buy a ticket. In here, it's nothing. I have my own rabbi, my own cantors,
wow.
Everybody here. I've been doing that. And the time I was doing a comedy camp, one of my kids from my comedy camp, because they are underprivileged, he was dying. And he had 2 weeks to live. And his wish was to meet Michael Jackson. And we would encourage him to eat. And I said, if he eats, I would be introducing him. So I called around and I got Michael's number, knowing a lot of people. I called him and I called his office and I told him, this kid is in a hospital right now. If he can, give him a call. That's, they say, no good deed gone without punishment.
Well,
that's my, as much as my involvement was.
Well, because
I have to go to testify.
Yeah.
And I got to go to, you know, all grand jury, all of that stuff.
Well, you know, bringing a child to Michael Jackson is like bringing a bottle of Vicodin to Rush Limbaugh's house. I mean, you know, there is kind of a thing.
I didn't bring, no. Don't misinterpret
okay.
it. I never brought the child to him. He said he wanted to meet Michael Jackson. And all I did, I called Michael Jackson office or ranch, I don't know, one of the studio. I called 3-4 places. I left a message. He's in hospital. This is the number for hospital. If he can't call him, cheer him up. That's all I said.
Oh, yeah, and I'm sure, you know, I'm just sort of goofing with you, but I wanted to get that whole story because I was surprised, you know, I was just researching this comedy stuff and I'd forgotten that whole area of things. What did you think, did you see the reality TV series about a year or so ago called Last Comic Standing? What did you think of that?
I said that was horrible.
Why?
You took a bunch of professional comics. You put them in competition with each other, and they try to pick up the comedian they would think he would be good on the TV show. It wasn't real. The real comic, you want to give an opportunity to everybody be funny. You know, and the professional comics, the guy, you know, he's been on the around for 10 years, been doing a stand-up comedy, put him against a comic that he'd been on for 6 months. That's not fair.
Hmm.
I think, you know, it should have been for an unprofessional comic. The people they had a credit of, they done Tonight Show or whatever, they shouldn't be involved with that. That's my opinion, that's my personal opinion about it, of course.
Cool. Where do you think comedy and stand-up comedy specifically is going to go in, like, the next 5 or 10 years? In other words, like, we had the boom probably in the 70s and the 80s, then there was just a glut too many comedians on TV, too many clubs popping up all over the place, and then maybe it's cycling again. Where do you think it's going?
I think the comedy is, if you look at the history of ever the depression and people being unhappy, the time the boom is coming, the time is, you know, people, they have depression, people, they have the interest go up, and they don't make enough money, and they are so much, and comedy is such a stress reliever that everybody go to comedy clubs that would really be able to escape from their problem for 2 hours. And I think right now, with all of the war and 9/11 and everything happening, the comedy is coming back again strong, because people, they do want to get away from, you know, the stress of everyday today life. It's very stressful.
Well, thank you for having a couple of clubs that will or try to de-stress people. Not only the people who go to the clubs to watch the comedians, but because apparently, you know, you do pay and you have a nice atmosphere. You know, it isn't a hole in the wall. It's not a toilet. You know, the comedians feel special, and you make them feel a little less stressed about what they do, which is kind of nice. And do you have any, you know, now that you've got the two clubs, do you have further plans for others, or what are your plans for 2006?
Yeah, opening. I mean, if you go on www.laughfactory.com, my dream, it is mostly try to expand a Laugh Factory comedy camp for underprivileged kids, and that's my dream, it is. And I'm opening another club in Atlanta with Jamie Foxx.
Oh.
Opening a couple of other clubs, different places, but is not, I'm not into, you know, expanding the club too much, but, you know, I'm just, any city I can go and be able to help and get community involved with each other, try to, you know, like for Christmas time, a father and mother, they don't have money to go buy for their kids a toy, or a single family, they don't have money to go buy a toy, they go by the club, and you know, we give a toy, we give a food away for people. And that's what's life about. Life is not about all for all of me. You got to share it. And that's what I'm hoping to share with the community in New York, and help to see some of the underprivileged kids in New York City. They wouldn't have a hard time like that, especially around the holidays.
Wow.
And anybody want to get involved with any of this stuff, they could go to www.laughfactory.com, L-A-U-G-H.
www.laughfactory.com. Thank you so much for Jamie Masada for joining us in the neighborhood, and for all the good stuff you do. I mean, I'm kind of a miserable, angry son of a bitch, but you do warm the cockles of my heart a little bit with the nice things that you're saying and the nice things that you're doing. So I wish you much success and laughter over the coming year.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.